I'm milking the Bill Nye debate. It was 2 hours. Bill Nye's statement in the Ken Ham debate this week was that, quote, if only one fossil that was out of place were found, it would wreck evolution, end quote. That's a strong claim. I remember him saying very much those same words. If you could find, Bill Nye told Ken Ham, only one fossil that was out of place, it would wreck evolution. Do you remember, you older folk, I don't know what you younger folk are taught anymore, do you remember the dinosaurs, the bird theory in school? Right? Well, just watch Jurassic Park. I think it's alluded to in there. That birds supposedly evolved out of dinosaurs. Okay? They would paint that small reptile-like creatures with wings. That's what I recollect. It's like a lizard with wings. It's the intermediate species between the dinosaur and the birds. That theory still goes on today, so even if you don't remember it, it's true. I looked it up. Well, at least it's true that they say it. Well, they discovered a prehistoric bird with bones 90% intact. So well preserved, they can see the intricacies of the bone. The very small bones in the wings. They have very fragile and delicate bones in the wings. And it's enough detail that they can construct how the bird flew. The dynamics from it. That's how much detail they have from this prehistoric bird, if I recall, was in China. It looks virtually like any other modern bird and flies like one. That's their word. That's not my interpretation. That's how they interpret it. And it was 60 million years before T-Rex. Bill Nye told Ken Ham, what? If only one fossil was out of place, it would wreck the evolutionary theory. I guess it wrecked it by about 60 million years. Birds were evolving in parallel with the dinosaurs at the same time. I don't know. It's supposed to be a tree. Everyone remember the famous evolutionary tree? You're supposed to have a predecessor. You can't have two trees. It's one tree. It's one tree of life, is their argument. How do you get a bird? It's supposed to come from a dinosaur, but it existed 60 million years before the dinosaur, according to their time scale. The arrogance of modern science apparently knows no bounds. I have a number of such references from crev.info. I don't think I told you that last time. Creation, evolutionary news, nice little summaries, and then a little commentary at the end, so he doesn't really add the commentary in the middle. You can see the facts and just the quotes that he has. If you want them, I can give them to you. I can email them to you. Now, in the first point here, God created the stars after their kind. He doesn't say after their kind. He says that for what? The birds, the animals on the sea, the animals on the land, the things that crawl, the trees. But I think by good and necessary implication, he's doing that for stars and for planets. Planets aren't stars. Some planets actually kind of reflect, like the moon. The moon isn't a star. It's the lesser light it talks about in that text, right? It gets its light from the sun. So it's after its own kind, necessarily. And the sun is just what? Another star. We just call it the sun because it's ours. And we revolve around it. The point here I wanted to emphasize before I continue on here is that creation is after its kind. God created all things after their kind. You see that repeated in these verses, right? After its kind, after its kind, after its kind, after its kind. What you do is take this, if you can find a digital copy of the Bible, which I would recommend for everybody. There are Bible programs out there, even some free ones. Copy and paste that in Word document, rearrange it, and so you can highlight. That's what I did. All those repeated phrases. You can see the pattern there. He's emphasizing something, right? Kind. Well, I'll tell you right up front. We don't know what a kind is. He doesn't define it for us. We have an idea. Birds, after their own kind. Animals, after their own kind. Plants. It says in particular, they have their own seed, that give forth seed after their own kind. Because what? The tree is within the seed. And the seed is just a predecessor to the tree, or the plant, or the bush, or whatever the case may be. So that gives us a broad idea of what a kind is. A kind, what it is, I would say then, and given this data from Genesis, is the animals or other created things. I put persons here. Persons are created after their own kind, humans, right? Persons, animals, or created things sufficiently similar with each other to be identified differently than other persons, animals, or created things. That's a self-evident definition if you heard what I said. Persons, animals, or created things sufficiently similar with each other to be identified differently than other persons, animals, or created things. It's just what makes things different. That's all I'm saying. That's what kinds are. And that's where the debate is. A dog is a dog regardless of what it looks like. A star is a star regardless of what color it is. A human is a human regardless of where they're born. It's after their own kind. What a kind is not. It's not an exhaustive list here. There's no list of amphibians. Amphibians aren't quite fish and they're not quite mammals. They're amphibians. There's no fungi. Where's the fungi? There's no viruses. It's not an exhaustive list. Remember, the point, part of the point of creation is narrowing down to the creation of man as the pinnacle of all that God made and how things are made for man. The giving of the stars is for man. Animals don't need years the way we do. They have seasons, as it were, because winter comes, they have to have their winter coat. But the way to use time is especially for man. They're not concerned day by day the way we are. They're concerned kind of season by season. Get everything they can right now in the moment. It's a picture for man. So he's telling the Jews at the time and us today, God created the world, everything after its own kind, whatever that may be, those kinds. I'll let you figure it out. I gave you a brain. Study creation. And of course we know Adam did because he did name the animals. It is not a species. Even Ken Ham admitted that in his most dogmatic, or what should I say, less dogmatic moments in that debate. He admitted we don't really know what a kind is. It's certainly not quite a species. A species, scientifically defined in general, even this is debated, you start going into science, you find a lot of things debated, is the ability to procreate. Dogs and wolves can interbreed and create something new. It's the same species. Okay? You can't breed them with other things and get something else. Nothing's going to happen. So, it's also not known scientific categories, as I was saying. It's not a species per se, but it's a true concept. He's saying something here to the language of the science they had of their day. They're going after their kind, whatever that may be. 1,000 years from now, our idea of science changes as well. And so God, in his infinite wisdom, doesn't use our language today, because it's, you know, 1,000 years from now, people are going to say, why is the Bible using the word for, you know, species? We've recategorized the whole thing now. We have a different word for that. The Bible must be full of error. If you want to find it that way, you can. God used their language and their languages after their own kind. Now, kind or nature, that which makes it so sufficiently different, the same with everything else of its own kind, but different from other kinds, right? A fish, not a dog. A dog is not a human. That nature or kind relates to the idea of purpose. What you are will help explain what your purpose is, or what your function or your goals in life are. The kind of something describes its function and purpose. And we see that in the case of the sun and the moon here. They are given, amongst other things, as time measurements for man, for sleeping, for working, for harvesting. So the nature of the sun and giving light and how we rotate around it and the like is such that its nature, what? Gives it a purpose or a function to help man determine time. The nature helps determine the purpose or the function of something. That's just the nature of reality. They go very close in hand. And so, in this case, the creation of the stars, sun, and moon has its purpose. He says, I've given it to you, I've made these things so that you can order time. Everything doesn't happen at once, right? Order time and put things in the days and their seasons and the like, so man can be productive and fruitful and get things accomplished. And also, to some extent, a polemic, as I mentioned before, against the worship of the sun and the moon, because the sun and the moon are not mentioned by name in this text, is it? It says the greater light and the lesser light. Isn't that interesting? He didn't know what the word sun was? Of course he did. Genesis, that is, Moses, the author of Genesis, uses the word sun and moon elsewhere, but not here. So there's a polemic, there's an argument against the pagans, the polytheists, who think everything's a god. No, our God made your God. He made the greater light and the lesser light. He made the behemoth. I'll get right to that right now and remind you again, the large creatures, the sea creatures there in that text. And so, interestingly, it turns out to be a similar word, I believe it was to the Canaanite gods. They worship a behemoth. And God said, I made him too. You get all this historical facts together. When they dig up this archaeological stuff, it makes the exegesis of the Bible more richer. The creation of time. You realize God created time here? Do you think of it that way? He just said, I gave you the sun and the moon and the stars for days, for years, for the seasons. He created time. Time is a creation of God. Time is not eternal, contrary to many evolutionists today. Matter is not eternal. God created both. That has great significance and implications in philosophy and in everyday life. And we talked about some of that in the opening sermons that I gave. God's in charge of all of it. Time is not eternal. Matter is not eternal. Only God is eternal. He's the one we should turn to. Not chance mixed with time, mixed with matter, which is the evolutionary approach to things. So we have, in summary, God created all things after their kind. I described in general what a kind is. I can't get more specific. I explained what it is not and how God used the stars and their purpose and function, the kind or the nature of something. Also tells you its purpose and function, how it can be used for your good and the glory of God. Now, number two, God created creatures after their kind, not just the sun and the moon and the stars. This is verses 11 through 14, 20 through 25. Now, the purpose of things in animals can vary. Animals can depend upon each other. We know there are certain insects that are required. Spiders live off of other insects. You're kind of like, I want a spider or so in my house because they take care of the insects, keep the house a little clean. And so there's this sometimes a hierarchy of not only eating but also helping us, the humans. Certain other animals live with the sharks, for instance. They have a symbiotic relationship. They swim alongside them in their gills. I don't remember what those are called. All kinds of interesting interdependency at times, as well as the survival of the fittest, in the most crassest sense of that word. Larger animals eating smaller animals. And they inspire us. The nature of these animals is such that they can inspire us. We are studying owls, jellyfish, and butterflies to learn how to fly better and be more water repellent, I just found out. So what I'm saying is the kinds, everything made after a kind, implies necessarily there's a purpose behind the kind. It's a function. But there are multiple functions and multiple purposes, even though there's one nature or one kind. That's how God has designed the universe. It is not simply and only animals are used for food. That's it. That's their purpose. There's more to it. They can be helpful. They help the blind. Dogs do. They help people with epilepsy, too. They can apparently smell or sense when the epileptic fit is about to kick in. We have a friend of ours, the Finns, as many of you know. She had two of those things. It's wonderful. It's got one nature, but it's a multidimensional, complex nature that has many uses, doesn't it? The animals. And the dog in this case. And we don't know it all. That's the glory and the beauty of creation and science. A lot of the atheists you see in their arguments, I see some anger and the like, they're saying, this is wonderful. And Bill Nye says, science is beautiful and the universe has infinite potentiality, apparently, so that I can always study. If I go your way, you have all the answers and you just take out the joy out of life. You don't want to study anything. That's kind of the implied argument. I've seen it over and over again. And it's not true. Our answer, that's why I'm very careful going through this, we don't know the nature of all things. God does. He knows it infinitely because he made it. We don't. And that's why we have thousands of years of studying, and even perhaps more before Christ comes, these things. It is a beautiful thing. We can learn. We had science before the evolutionists, contrary to their popular belief, apparently. Many, many scientists for a few hundred years. Because we said there's order out there. There's a consistency of nature out there. And, of course, all things have one purpose in common, to glorify God. One nature with multiple purposes and functions. Now, this unknown world is a wonderful world, and this is what I've learned recently here at the same website again, the invisible influence of plants coming to light. This is 2014. The air, it said, quote, the air is filled with substances we barely notice, molecules produced by plants we're just now learning about. But they have profound effects on climate and ecology. They're called volatile organic compounds. Say that with me. Or VOCs. Molecules with a low boiling point that evaporate out of plants and waft through the air. Scientists know about a few of them, but not all. We just discovered hundreds of them when we only thought there were dozens. This is in the last year. From plants. And how many plants are out there? How much of the earth is covered by plants of one type or another in trees? And they're emitting this stuff, these VOCs? You think that might have an effect on climate? Or our breathing air? We just don't know. We've just now scratched the surface. There is wonderful mystery out there. They have these kinds, the plants. And their effect, their nature is multifaceted. It's so complex. And we're just now studying into what it means to be a plant, essentially. A greater question than just the plants is, what is life? Evolutionists, and I never properly, I don't recall, define evolution, simply the changing of lesser, simpler forms to more complex forms of life, from a fungi to a human, an amoeba to a human, is their theory. Somehow, in a world that's winding down and losing energy, information nevertheless increases, complexity can nevertheless increase behind all that, which is absurd. There are also theistic evolutionists who believe pretty much the same thing, except they add God in the equation. They say, well, God directs this whole evolutionary process from sponge to human. And I found out recently, talking to a friend of mine, he was kind of confused. He had heard there were theistic evolutionists that apparently believe everything else evolved, but not humans, which would be an odd thing. That's a better position. I mean, the big debate is really humans. And I don't believe animals evolved. You can see that here in the text. Everything's made after their kind, right then and there. But it's especially humans that are important. If we've come from an animal, then the animals are as good as us, or we're as bad as they are. And that's all there is to it, because there's no differentiation. It's just merely a sliding scale of being. So, the big question for the evolutionist is, what is life? How do we get life? This was last year, an MIT physicist, Jeremy England. This is another website, evolutionarynews.org. Quote, since he imagines energy... Oh, wait, sorry, this is my quote. Since he, this MIT physicist, Massachusetts Institute of Technology, imagines energy and a few atoms under the right conditions of heat can lead to life. This is what he believes. Energy and a few atoms of under the right condition of heat can lead to life. He mistakenly uses a modern illustration that does not exist. Quote, you start with random clumps of atoms, and if you shine light on them for long enough, it should be no surprise that you get a plant. An MIT physicist. The guy's a genius! Because he's so desperate to find a source for life, and he doesn't want it in God. Obviously, you get a clump of atoms, put it under light, just wait long enough, 2 billion years. And whammo-zammo, you get a plant. That's amazing. That's his illustration, really? I must have missed that one. Maybe if he realized that plants can live without the earth and oxygen, he could pull it off. And this is what I mean. In the spring of 2013, the MIT Technology Review Journal reported on an evolutionary timeline of the development of life, from simple to complex, using Moore's Law. Moore's Law is a technological law that transistors double in complexity every few years. I think it's every 2 years or something like that. I don't recall. But the broad idea of the law is every few years, every few decades, or every few centuries, there's a complexity of things in technology. And so they took this law, in particular of transistors, extrapolated the current data of complex life backwards to supposedly the simplest life forms, using Moore's law. Right now, we assume every few hundred million years, complexity doubles. So we have complexity now, let's have it, right? Keep having it and work our way backwards. Backwards extrapolation. Everyone with me? The time chart here? Now, the Earth is supposedly 4.5 billion years old. That's what Bill Nye said. It must be true. The dates they arrived at was around 9.7 billion. Oops! We had life before Earth! Think about it, brothers and sisters. So maybe that MIT physicist was right. There's just enough light to somehow kept hitting light for 9 billion years and it came to complex life. These two men, they're sticking to their model, though. They're like, no, we're going to stick to it. With the MIT article noting, quote, "The nature of evolution is filled with subtleties that most biologists would agree we do not yet fully understand." You think? Absolutely incredible. They're hang on. They will hang on until they lose their sanity. Because it can't be anything else. And as a footnote, or maybe it shouldn't be a footnote, these two scientists said, well, maybe your model's wrong. You're just assuming a constant Moore's law. Maybe evolution came along and accelerated here in a little bit, right? Just a short period of 100 million years and boom, you got a lot of complex life. He says, no, no, that sounds too much like the young Earth creationists trying to squeeze everything. We don't want to do that approach. That's what they said! We want to have life before there's an Earth to have life, before there's oxygen to breathe. In the deep bowels of space, apparently. This is absolutely incredible. And they take it seriously, and they thought, this is a wonderful thing. And the MIT Technology Review Journal has gone stupid, apparently. Science has gone stupid for 150 years. In many regards. Not all of it, obviously. I was an engineer. Let's talk specifically about plants. I mentioned plants earlier as an example of the unknown but wonderful world of how we are studying and digging into what kinds are. And therefore, how we can use the kinds, because a kind has a function, has a purpose behind it, by necessity. Excuse me, I have one more because I skipped over that. It fits so well with the other one. Biophysicist Harold Marowitz told The New Scientist, that's a magazine, that his own theory is, quote, part of a quiet paradigm revolution going on in biology in which the radical randomness of Darwinianism is being replaced by a much more scientific law-regulated emergence of life. Everyone catch the subtlety difference? It's not very subtle. Traditional Darwinian evolutionism is based on time plus chance creates life. Apparently 9.7 billion years. 4 billion years for the Earth. These guys are saying, well, no, it's not randomness. It's a quiet revolution here. There are actually laws. Laws governing the creation of life. You think? Maybe it's God? They don't want to say that. You can't put God in. You can't put intelligent design in there, which doesn't even mention God. The ID, or you can call them. A lot of thousands of scientists who believe there's intelligent life behind what created everything, but will never use the word God. They're not necessarily a Christian at all. I mean, some of them believe in xenophorn, genesis, or origin, birth by aliens. More intelligent than us, apparently. So, remember, it's a quiet paradigm revolution going on in biology. That's why you don't hear about it in the news. This is the latest news I have. Don't trust the news many times. You have to dig it up yourself. Plants. Darwin's abominable mystery was his own words, apparently, in a letter he wrote to a friend about plant life. The sudden origin of flowering plants without fossil ancestors. Boom, there they are. And the fossils, you just see this layer, consistent layer. There's none of them, and then all of a sudden there's all this plant life that can produce itself, flowering plants, without fossil ancestors. how can this be? There's got to be some evidence of some what? Pre-flowering evolutionary plant that slowly developed into a flowering plant. About 100 to 200 million years ago, preserved plants, there's no development. They are the same reproductive mechanism. We found plants, very intricate preserved plants, estimated 100 to 200 million years ago, preserved, brothers and sisters, that have the same flowering ability as today. There is no development. See, what you have is evolution saying, oh, well, life apparently started 9.7 billion years ago in some cases. And then when it did evolve, it evolved in spurts, not a slow, gradual, random change. All of a sudden, there's plants that flower, and they stay the same for 100 million years. No evolution, no change. Darwin's abominable dilemma. They have no answer other than to say, we're going to get an answer eventually if we have to dig to the center of the earth. We will prove our theory right. Even if it means having life before there's a planet. Quote, here's the point. Once again, we see abrupt appearances of complex features followed by stasis. That is, things don't change. All of a sudden you have life, the Cambrian explosion, look it up. Boom, all this complex life, and it just stays the same for 100 million years. Stasis. Abrupt appearance of complex features followed by stasis. That's the rule in the fossil record. Why should fully modern plant reproductive systems via pollen tubes and stigmas abruptly appear only to exist 105 million years with little change and suddenly diversify in a big bang into modern subgroups that remain unchanged for another 140 million years? Didn't Darwin expect gradual improvement? What a weird law evolution is. Complex systems appear out of nowhere. Then don't change except for big bangs every once in a while. That's no explanation. That stuff happens on steroids. It belongs to Murphy's Law book, not to Newton's. Maybe their timeline's a little off, too. God made all things and all plants according to their kind. The fossil record proves it. Animals. Again, evolution denies fixed kinds and sees the complex arising from the simple. Contrary to everyday occurrence, when we see all kinds of complicated things made by humans, made by complex things. That's the known status in which we investigate, I don't know, what was Bill Nye again? Oh, yeah, just like CSI. In CSI, they assumed these things spontaneously combust. These things spontaneously come to life. People just spontaneously die because we live in a chance, random universe. Oh, wait, no, they assume orderliness, and they assume if something complex is going on, it must be machinations of a complex mind. You think? Yeah, I think so. Complex makes complex. Or God can make simple things, and he has. And we're finding out, of course, even the simple is complex. The cell. The Cambrian explosion, 450 million years ago, supposedly, during a short minuscule time. Remember, we're talking 540 million years ago on a 4.9 billion scale of the Earth, or 9.7 billion scale of life, depending on who you ask. And of that scale, 70 to 89 million years was this Cambrian period. A period of explosion, of complex life just coming in the fossils out of nowhere. That's a blink in an eye in evolutionary time. You realize that, right? Statistically speaking. All the current species, this is not my wording, again, the unbeliever's wording, virtually all the current species we have today can be traced and seen in the Cambrian explosion. What a quinkidink. Faster than current evolutionary theory accounts for. Quote, the interpretation is difficult due to limited supply of evidence based mainly upon incomplete fossil record and chemical signatures remaining in Cambrian rocks, end quote. In other words, we don't know, we don't understand, we don't get it, but we're not going to admit it. Our theory still stands. Learn how to read scholaries. It'll help. They found in Canada, again, 2014, another dig with easily twice as much as they've ever found in the past of such complexity of animals and diversity of animals, again, traced back to the Cambrian explosion. So they're going to dig up some more good stuff I could find, some juicy stuff. Darwin's Dilemma, this is called, the Cambrian explosion. This is CRB.info again. Quote, where did the information come from to build the new body plans? They're finding new body plans. They're finding animals with organs intact up there in Canada, brothers and sisters, supposedly millions of years old. Last I checked, bodily organs don't last that long. But anyway. And they found some, apparently, that had, you know, new body plans. Oh, all of a sudden, all these creatures have strong shells that protect them and the like. Where does the information come from to build new body plans? That's the question. Quote, well, maybe evolution just ran faster, that's all. That's their answer right now. The Cambrian explosion is gradual development until there isn't gradual development. There's an explosion, then gradual development some more. So they're fixing their, it's called ad hoc explanation. You give your theory, find evidence to the contrary, and then you adjust your theory to fit the evidence. Maybe evolution just ran faster, that's all. Maybe there was more oxygen back then. Maybe that's just how evolution works. Maybe a combination of the above. Are you satisfied? Anyone giving answers like that to explain a major failure of the project should be fired on the spot. If it weren't for the fact that academia has joined hands in unflinching allegiance to Charles Darwin and surrounded itself with lapdog reporters and lawyers like security dogs, they would be laughed out of town. Exactly. Bill Nye, lastly, had his tikkatilik. This is why I can never go into science like this and debate on the floor, because I can't pronounce half the words that are in Latin or Greek roots. And I remember things how I pronounce them. This was the fish that was the missing link between amphibians and fish. Okay? The tikkatilik. A few weeks earlier, I looked it up real time when I heard him. I looked up the word he had on the screen. I Googled it real fast. And I found on this website, they found the latest information 2 weeks before he gave his, Bill Nye gave him his evidence. The hip bone was too complex. It doesn't fit the model. Right? It's supposed to be simple to complex. So that means if he's supposed to be the gap between the fish and the amphibians, he should be between the complexity of an amphibian, but not quite the complexity of a fish. He doesn't fit that mold. What did Bill Nye say at the beginning? If you could find one fossil that doesn't fit in the order for evolution, the theory falls apart. Oh, well, yet again. Earlier, we found in 2010, I think it was, more complex forms than this fish, with an older date than this fish. I thought, it's supposed to be simple to complex. That's the chronology, right? Doesn't fit again. And then there's the this fish that everyone thought to have gone extinct in the late Cretaceous period, but were discovered in 1938 off the coast of South Africa. I looked that up. That's true. I mean, if we admit and we don't know everything about living animals. Did you hear the one about the crocodile that can climb a tree? Anyone see that? Alligators. They found alligators. They used to be rumors. And the scientists apparently finally decided to get money for something worthwhile and verified that alligators climb trees, even up to 13 feet. If we know so little about living animals, what are we going to say about dead animals? Apparently anything you want. Because ignorance is bliss. And all the scientists are happy. So, who's to say we won't find some of these animals still living today? And that's just one example. You can think of the ocean, how vast it is. 2/3 of the earth, 2 miles deep at times. What's down there? We don't know. We haven't scoured everything. Brothers and sisters, these are wonderful things and wonderful truths geared and derived from the Word of God. Without, I hope, twisting the exegesis. It's simple and clear. God made certain things that follow within its own nature or its own kind. Birds after their own kind. Animals after their own kind. Creeping things after their own kind. Fungi after their own kind. What that may be, we don't always know, but we know a fungi is not a bird. Bird's not a fish. In fact, they have fish that, you know, walk on land. You guys aware of that? I've seen them. They don't have arms or limbs, and they haven't changed in thousands of years, so the scientists never used them as examples. They aren't evolving. That's just the way they are. They go right back in the water, of course, because they're still fish. This is where we are, brothers and sisters. It's that absurd in the sciences, especially in biology and evolution. But praise be to God, they're not consistent in that ridiculous approach to life, and there are many things that they use and created that we can use and create and use it for God's glory. The greatest purpose for all of creation, of course, is to glorify God. Everything and everyone has a purpose according to their kind. Plants for animals, animals for man, and man and all creation for God. Rejoice that you and creation are unique with a purpose and a definition from God, a God of order and not the chaos of the God of evolution. Let's pray. Marvelous God above, we thank you for showing us here in your Bible the basic fundamental parameters of science, that things have their own nature and are created according to their own kind. And there's a consistency thereby in which we can examine them and learn from them and use them. And use them for your glory, God Almighty. And may we be strengthened against the lies of evolution in this day and age, and strengthen our children and our families. For your glory alone. Amen.